Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Welcome back. In the news, Republicans are running racist campaign ads, though that's not really news, I guess, is it? And some of them may be abusing their privilege of taxpayer-funded communications. Senator Kelda Royce gave us some ideas for getting the legislature to be useful again. The Packers beat Tampa Bay in a battle of depleted offenses. The Brewers are home for good, at least in the regular season. Now they try to avoid being home for the entire offseason. And we'll speak in a minute with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dr. Jill Underley. This is Up North News for Friday, September 23rd. I'm today's, Pat Kreitlow.
Today is Monday.
Today is Monday, September 26th. Damn it. Who put the wrong day in the teleprompter again?
Come on. We told you Ron Burgundy will read whatever you put in front of him.
I mean, Pat Kreitlow. Pat Kreitlow will read whatever you put in front of him.
Did you notice the delay before I turned on my mic as I quickly went through my notes that I thought I had completely updated over the weekend and then most certainly did not? So
it's okay.
At least you know that if you ever give me reads to do live reads for like promos and liners and things, they're going to be spot on take one. Just don't ask me to do the date.
There you go.
Actually, I did that. One of my very first radio jobs, 1987, I was working at WBKV in West Bend. And we always, you know, we scripted out the noon news, somewhat like you heard there. And at the very last second, some story came up that we had to flip who was reading the first story. And so I grabbed the open, I read through it all. You know, I said, this is the news at noon. I'm Karen Siegel. And then the next thing you hear is Karen saying, no, you're not. So what I'm getting at is this is not a function of old age. As much as I like to joke about, you know, approaching being very elderly, it's not that at all. It's just complete carelessness. And I'll plead guilty to that.
No, it's just consistency. That's all it is, Pat. Just chalk it up as what it is. It's consistency. You will consistently read whatever's in front of you.
Pretty well, especially if I wrote it and you know, and it's there, it doesn't matter when it's from. So once again, 4 to 6 inches of snow expected tonight because I must have typed that once and there it is right in front of me.
Oh, that's mean. That's a mean, cruel prank. We are only like a few days into fall. Do not tell anybody snow.
I know. I'm sorry. We instead have to get to more weighty news. What something I was so eager to get to this. We have a major winner amongst us, and I'm not talking Powerball. I'm talking Luke Mathers, meat raffle champion. And congratulations, I guess.
Thank you. Thank you. I almost had to retire because I told Kelsey, we went to the meat raffle yesterday, the local distillery here in Cottage Grove, Downdrin's Distilling, and every last Sunday of the month, they do a meat raffle. And we've been going pretty much every month throughout probably like the last 6 months, to be honest. Like I was just going to say summer, but it's been longer than that. We probably started going in spring and I have not been a winner. And I'm kind of a sore loser when I'm not the winner. And especially for the facility has had a very nice beef tenderloin that I've had my eyes on. And they have it every month and it looks so good and I want to cook it up. And I was falling short every single meat raffle. I wasn't the winner for that one. I was buying multiple paddles. I was trying to increase my odds any way I could. And so yesterday, it was kind of a little stormy. It was gloomy, overcast skies. We were assuming that most people weren't going to go to the distillery for the meat raffle. And we were correct. It was kind of a smaller crowd. And so I took my chances. I knew the odds were going to be in my favor. And we were betting paddles here and there for the first couple. Kelsey won one of the distillery does bottles like that they, what's the word for it? They're like test bottles. They will try to distill something. And so we got a cocoa cherry flavored coffee liqueur that's clear, but it smells really good. I didn't try it yesterday. It was one of their test run ones. So we won that, Kelsey, and I was like, oh, well, hopefully we didn't lose all of our luck on that one. And then we won a ground beef and some sirloin steaks in the next one. And then the final round was the tenderloin round. And I was like, all right, I'm still going to buy all my extra paddles. And I walked away the winner of the tenderloin as well, Pat. So I got sirloin steaks, 3 pounds of ground beef, and a 5 pound beef tenderloin that I am thrilled about.
Question from the peanut gallery here. What are these paddles you're talking about buying or betting on?
Oh, that's so you have to purchase a paddle. So that's how the raffle works. There's one
like
through 30.
Like an actual paddle? Is there like physical violence going on at these things? Or
No. It's like a little, it's like a stake that you would put in the garden, I think, like label. And the owners refer to them as the paddles. So it's $5 a paddle. You gotta you gotta buy into the raffle and then you go from there. And yesterday, Kelsey and I were the big winners. So I was very thrilled.
Listen to the enthusiasm. I think you'll have this when the Bucks play. He does not have this enthusiasm for the Packers or even some of the best Brewer victories. But you give this guy the gift of meat, and he's there.
You know what?
He's happy.
I bet you that Tim Michaels never even participated in a meat raffle. So I love being from Wisconsin, and my meat raffle is winning. Brian, he is here in the background, and he's telling me he loves meat raffles, too.
Dr. Jill Underley, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, will join us next. Question one, has she ever been part of a meat raffle? After this, you're up north. So we went from a meat raffle to meatloaf. I see where Luke's mind is today, and it's not on the vegetarian portion of any given menu. And yes, I will ask the state superintendent about meat raffles in a little bit, but we're going to have a more traditional beginning here first. Dr. Jill Underley joins us now. Doctor, good to have you here.
Hey, good morning. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
You gave your 2022 State of Education address, and that's what I really wanted to focus on here, because we're in the depths of what I guess you could call silly season in the campaign cycle, and there are so many things that get tossed about what public schools are getting right or getting wrong or what they need or what they're taking, and rather than having to navigate all of that, better to go, right to the top to somebody who, during this very important juncture of public messaging is sharing her own message of the state of education in Wisconsin these days. So I guess I'll start first by asking, on the whole, the overview, how do you best describe the state of Wisconsin education in 2022 right now?
Well, I think, you kind of hit it on the head, though, initially. We're in silly season. So I think when you cut through all the noise, I think the state of education in Wisconsin right now is positive. I really feel like when I go out to the schools and I talk to school leaders and I talk to teachers and I talk to kids and parents, and I've been, speaking with school board members as well, people feel good about their public schools. But, like you said, with the silly season piece, we're coming up on an election, a big election, and public schools are supposed to be nonpartisan. Public schools are for everybody. And when you think about local communities from rural to urban, people all over Wisconsin have, in general, very positive, good feelings about their public schools. But, culture wars have come home. And we're finding them in our schools because people want to divide our communities politically. And so my job as the state superintendent is to stand up to that silliness. I have to defend our public schools, and I will always advocate for our public schools because I truly believe they're doing good work.
When you talk about the way people feel about their local school versus education overall, the parallels are striking. If you describe healthcare reform to many people, they might tend to lean against it. But then you explain all of the elements and they're for all of them. Or in recent polling, people say their own economy is just fine, but they have a high negative perception of the economy overall. And the same can be said about crime. They say that they feel safe where they are, and yet they have this huge negative perception about just how big the crime problem is compared to the factual numbers. And now we get the same thing where people are they feel good about their local school, but they feel the state of education is not in a good place right now. And that just tells me that there is a political class in the country and in the state that seems to only be able to either attain power or advance a message by making people, en masse feel negative about how things are going.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's all part of a general strategy, whether, like you said, it's about healthcare, if it's about communities and crime, or if it's about public education, unfortunately, is just to divide people and make them fear the unknown. I think in general, the United States and Wisconsin, it's a fairly safe place, for example. But yes, there is, certainly we have to look at their pockets in our state or in our country that can improve when it comes to crime. It's same is true for healthcare access, right? There's parts of the state that doesn't have very good access to healthcare. It could be anything, but you're right. When you have 24-hour news, and when you have like this, media that wants to sell papers based on headlines, what sells is fear. Getting people's attention and making them fear something is what gets things sold or gets people to listen. And that's just really unfortunate. Again, just because when you think about the mission of public schools, we shouldn't be fearing that. We should be supporting that. And people generally have good feelings about their school. And then when you say, but about the general state of education, well, somewhere else is where the problems are, not in my school. And that's just really unfortunate, because we have people who work so hard in our schools and take care of kids' needs, not just their academic and their intellectual needs, but their social and emotional needs too, and their food insecurity or whatever it might be. And that gets demoralizing when people are, trying to divide that work.
You talk about the foundational services that good schools can provide to our kids, but you also begin your address talking about how good schools are foundational to democracy itself. What do you mean by that?
So when you think about why public schools were started in this country, they're not in the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. That duty was left up to the states, right? So in our state constitution, we have, for example, we put forward uniform schools as much as possible for ages 4 through 20. And the whole point of that, and this is not uncommon, every state has this in similar form. It's because without an educated democracy, or I should say, let me correct that, an educated citizenry, the educated voter, people who are able to understand, how to read and how to do math and, be able to communicate and basically make informed decisions through critical thinking, that's how our democracy survives. That's how our democracy thrives, in being able to sort truth from fiction, or whatever the case may be when we're making a decision about who to vote for. It's the reason that they're meant to be non-religious. They're supposed to be sectarian, and because we want to make sure that everybody has access to the highest, most comprehensive education that we can provide, so that they can then go on and give back to that public good, whether it's through careers or, you think about farming whatever it might be, so that they're able to be successful in their chosen path, which then makes everybody else better through the greater good. You know, the ability to pay taxes and provide amenities in our communities. So it's really, it's all part of how our country was started, and it's all about how our country will thrive, really, is by having access to free public education.
State Superintendent Jill Underle joins us for this hour. Dr. Underle, let's talk a bit more about the whole notion of inclusion in education. Public education needs to be inclusive in that, you know, anybody can get an education, not just the children of wealthy families as it used to be, you know, generations ago. But we can't just talk about inclusion in terms of everybody can come into the schoolhouse, but in terms of the lessons that are being provided, that they can't just be, you know, what makes one group feel good in terms of, you know, what that curriculum is made up of, that there needs to be thoughts of, you know, are the things that we're teaching, you know, as inclusive and able to reach people from all walks of life when they come into that school. And yet there is, it seems to be the, you know, the backlash du jour of, you know, if you want to call it culture wars or whatever. So can you talk for a bit about that importance of not just inclusion of input, I guess, the students, but inclusion of output, the lessons that are being taught to our kids in a wide variety of areas and subjects.
And that's just to build on that, you know, so really our schools are microcosms of our greater community. When you think about workplaces and you think about neighborhoods and you think about churches, wherever you are, whatever kind of setting, public or private, it's very diverse. You've got individuals with disabilities, you've got people of different colors and ethnicities, religions, you know, sexuality, gender, whatever it might be, language. And really, like I said, you know, our schools are microcosms of the greater diversity of our communities and our country. And for people to feel safe and included in those conversations, we all need to understand the lived experiences of those individuals. And so it's why it's extremely important that we have that diversity represented in what we teach in our schools. You know, I'm a former social studies teacher, and we always made sure, you know, like you see kind of in the media now with like Hispanic Heritage Month or Black History Month. My goal as a teacher was that we shouldn't be focusing just on months. I mean, these experiences should be woven throughout our lessons and our literature and our, you know, our current events, whatever it might be, throughout the course of the school year. And when we are fully able to understand the experiences of others, we become a much richer country. Culturally diversity, you know, diverse as far as our thinking, and ultimately a safer place for everybody to grow and thrive.
The pushback is rooted in something so simplistic that I almost hesitate, but I will anyway. Those who say that it should just be a focus on how to read, how to write, and how to do math, and that, you know, and that should be the apparently the entire curriculum or something along those lines. But I'll try to be somewhat fair in this and say, can we or should we be doing more of just the simple bits of, you know, rote instruction rather than social studies, history, and things that I guess are open to somebody else's interpretation?
I would say absolutely not, because part of me on the surface, and I'm not being flippant, is saying, okay, so if we just focused on reading, so what are we going to focus on? On what? Reading what? You know, what literature or which media? So, I mean, we really need to understand that public schools, you know, again, they reach everybody, they're for everybody. We want to make sure that individuals are and children are able to come out of the experience being able to think critically about past events as well as current events, understanding their present. And again, just that general microcosm of society that our schools represent. When people go out into the world, you know, whether they're working in a global corporation, a national corporation, or on a small farm in southwestern Wisconsin, they need to understand the experiences of other people, because those other experiences are going to impact them. And again, that goes back to the idea of a well-informed citizenry who right. is able then to help, you know, fight for our democracy so our democracy can continue.
Dr. Jill Underle, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, is our guest. We'll continue the conversation after this break. You're up north.
Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
We are talking with Dr. Jill Underle, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, on this Monday morning. And we've been talking about the need for being inclusive, not just in people, but in lessons. And one of the excerpts from her speech that really stuck out to me was about the need to embrace teaching difficult concepts, which include racism and sexism, and to not do so would be a blatant disregard of the truth of our country's history. Our history includes both slavery and democracy. And just because you don't teach it because it's uncomfortable does nothing but endanger the continuation and strength of our democratic society. It is culturally relevant. It is accurate teaching. And to say otherwise is problematic and racist. And I wanted to start with there, because we talked with Scott Ross in our 8 o'clock hour about the need to call out racism when it's there, not tap dance around it. And for people who are almost literally trying to whitewash history and history lessons, Dr. Underle, I just want to salute you for calling that out explicitly in your address.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. It's a very powerful line, and it's one that you just want to make sure that, I mean, because it's extremely important that people hear it, because when you think about all the attempts there have been to limit conversations on race, or when you think about the limitations on the rights of LGBTQ plus students, I mean, we need to think about our children's social emotional health. And when we don't talk about these concepts, I mean, we're doing a great harm to them, but we're also harming our ability to think critically and to have very, you know, informed and civil conversations about those topics too as adults.
You also get into the environment itself, the learning environment, and making sure that it is welcoming and affirming to all. And that, you know, that may mean, you know, that things aren't handled the way that some people would like them to be, you know, once upon a time. But once upon a time, we weren't nearly as welcoming and inclusive. And by affirming identities, you write, this is suicide prevention. It's strong mental health practice, and that pronouns save lives, which some critics, you know, seized on after the speech. But I wanted to give you a chance to, you know, first talk more about this whole way that we build a welcoming community in our schools.
Well, we know that when kids feel welcome and safe in school, they're able to learn. And when you think about data that we've gotten from we do a survey of schools, and I'm trying to think of what the name of it is, but it's basically, it asks kids about, it's the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. Sorry, I just thought of it. It's the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. And it asks kids about things like domestic violence, dating violence. It talks about alcohol and drug use. And it's completely anonymous. But then basically what we do is that information goes back to the school. So then the school can make informed decisions about programming or what kinds of outreach they need to be doing. And one of the questions on there is literally, I've thought about suicide, you know, in the past 6 months, you know, or in the past year, or I've had a plan, all these kinds of things just to get that awareness. And the suicide idealization rates for children or youth who are LGBTQ plus are very high. And they're even higher when they don't have a supportive adult in their life, whether it's at home or at school. And so what we know literally is when we talk about affirming identities, seeing kids, you know, so that they do feel safe and heard, especially LGBTQ plus kids, we are literally saving lives by having inclusive and welcoming environments. And so when we try to limit those conversations, or when we tell, you know, schools they can't have books on the shelves or flags on their windows that say that they are safe places, I mean, we are doing a huge disservice to children and their mental health.
So when the Republican candidate for governor says that, you know, DPI, the Department of Public Instruction, has gone full woke, and that Governor Evers and Jill Underley are focused on imposing woke politics and gender ideology rather than literacy and quality education, as if you can't walk and chew gum at the same time. What I got out of that is an epic lack of appreciation for what educators see in some of their students, the home life that they come from, and the needs that they have. And like you said, you know, a teacher quite often might be the only compassionate and or mature adult that they deal with on any given basis. And you can't make that go away.
You're right. And I'm sorry if I was smiling, but when you said the full woke, I'm just thinking how silly that sounds. You know, it's just I mean, there's people out there who just have no idea what schools do. And I think it's very clear in that response by that candidate. For example, he has no idea what we're doing in our schools to reach kids and to make sure kids feel safe and welcoming. And it's the 21st century. We have to get on board with these, get on board with it right now. Our society as a whole has been moving towards more inclusivity, more understanding. Certainly, again, you know, kind of going back to the first segment where we talked about, you know, the divisive rhetoric. I mean, that's what gets people fired up. But it's unfortunate that it's happening at the expense of kids. You think about the kids that certain people are targeting, you know, to score political points. These are our most vulnerable kids. And they're the kids that we worry about, the kids that don't have enough food on, you know, at home, or the kids who whose parents are having to work multiple jobs to support their families, or the kids who don't have a safe or supportive adult that they can talk to. And the fact that they get further targeted is extremely, it's disheartening, but it's tragic that, you know, adults will target kids for political points like that.
Well, and another way that they do that, just using schools to score political points, is in the funding of them, where we'll pivot to next year. And we certainly have not been shy on this program to say frequently that we are wasting time and wasting an opportunity to have a record budget surplus in the state and not putting it to work for students, for workers, for infrastructure, for natural resources. And, you know, again, you didn't necessarily have to go there, but you did. You truly called out what you noted. For example, in 2023, the experimental 5-year pilot on freezing revenue limits will turn 30 years old. That's a pretty damning indictment of leadership in the state legislature.
Yeah, and I guess the other piece of that I would just like to comment on is that I watched all the Blue Ribbon Commission meetings. I actually was a presenter at one of them. This is back in 2018, and the report came out in January of 2019. And it was nonpartisan. You know, the whole thing, it was bipartisan commission, but public education used to be nonpartisan. It didn't matter, you know, Republican, Democrat, whatever your political beliefs are. I mean, schools are for everybody. It's why school board elections are nonpartisan. It's why my position is nonpartisan. And what we have had is that, especially in the past few years, is that taxpayers like yourself, myself, and all the people in the state of Wisconsin who pay property taxes and income taxes, whatever it might be, they have paid their taxes. It's our legislature who has chosen not to spend it and put it in a kitty for a project that, you know, of their, you know, what they want to spend it on. So that surplus has come from the fact that they haven't funded public education, among other things too, but public education primarily. And it is our largest expenditure, as it should be in the state of Wisconsin. And they haven't budgeted towards it. And so that money has grown. I believe, rightfully so, that funding and that budget surplus is meant for our public schools, because that's why we paid our taxes, expecting it to go there.
Yeah. You note, if this legislature spent 1/6 of the current taxpayer-funded budget surplus on schools, it could pay teachers and bus drivers, support staff and custodians, and make sure that there's universal free meals to kids. There's so much that could be done. What concern do you have about how that surplus could be used next year, given there's all kinds of different conditions that could exist in the Capitol next year? But which one of those are you most concerned about? What would the 2023 state budget, the use of that surplus, under what scenario would you be most concerned?
Yeah, I mean, really, we need to put our money towards our schools, because it shouldn't matter, again, who is elected. I mean, it shouldn't matter if it's a Republican or a Democrat. I mean, public schools in Wisconsin are important to everybody. It's just a campaign issue, I feel, because it's first our schools as well running for governor. And so, of course, the other side is going to use that as a wedge. But ultimately, I would hope that we could put that aside, no matter who wins, put the money into our public schools, because it is, I mean, there's so many reasons why. When you think about, if we don't get that money in our public schools, the local taxes, our local taxpayers are going to be raising their own taxes through referendum to pay for schools, which will ultimately lead to winners and losers, because you'll have some communities who pass it, some communities that don't. And so some schools will be off, better off than others. And that really harms our state as a whole, because our public schools grow our next leaders. They are our next healthcare workers. They are our next teachers. They are our next civic, our next legislators. We need to make sure that we have the best educated populace in the nation if we're going to be competitive economically at both a national and global scale as well.
School funding is incredibly complex, but I'm going to try to ask for a simple question anyway. If there was a single thing that a legislature could do that would provide permanent help to schools, obviously apart mm-hmm. from just more spending overall, period, but what change in the structure could make the biggest difference?
Yeah, so as you said, just that structure piece, putting more money into our revenue per member or per student, it's been fixed for decades. But then the biggest impact could honestly be in the reimbursement rate for our special education programs, because when we are reimbursed at 30%, that 70% difference has to come from our general budget at our school district. And as a former superintendent, we transferred hundreds of thousands of dollars every year that would be impacting programs for all special education to make sure that program was whole at the end of the year. So if we were to reimburse rates at 45 and then 60 and then ultimately 90% with our sights set on honestly 100%, that funding, those transfers wouldn't happen, and all that money could stay in our classrooms for programming, for salaries, for facilities, and we wouldn't have to go to referendum.
And yet, this was probably the biggest gut punch I got since starting this show. We had a guest that explained that voucher schools, they're not getting a 30% reimbursement rate on special education. They're getting a little better deal, aren't they?
Yeah, they get 90%. And you think about the innate unfairness there, but I always think about it this way. If our schools were golf courses, and we have public golf courses and we have private golf courses, our taxpayers are funding both. except the private golf courses are open to only certain membership, and they can kick you out at any time they want. And we're also reimbursing the private golf courses at a higher rate for different services or whatever you want to say versus the public golf course.
It's just a system that's completely unsustainable, and hopefully we can see some change coming soon under your leadership. Dr. Jill Underle, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you very much.
Have a great day. And we'll wrap up today's show right after this. You're up, Martin.
It's times like these you learn to love again. It's times like these, time and time again.
I know, I can hear you saying, Pat, you didn't make time to ask Dr. Underle about meat raffles. That's correct. I did not. Was it an accident or by design?
It was by design, of course. And now I felt so silly playing Meatloaf into her interview, but I didn't know what else to go with. And I was like, we're staying on the Meatloaf train.
That is totally fine. Mr. Loaf would appreciate that very much if you were still here with us.
We'll have to save it for next appearance for Dr. Underle. When it's not such a serious time, hopefully we can ask her whether or not she's attended a meat raffle.
There you go. We expected this was coming, and now it's been made official that the Wisconsin Elections Commission has launched a series of educational videos aimed at creating a better understanding of the election process and building more trust in safety and security of voting in Wisconsin. This, according to Mitchell Schmidt's article in the Wisconsin State Journal. They are 6-minute videos. They are primarily targeted towards students, but they are available to the general public. And that's a very good thing, trust me. But they also come with accompanying lesson plans to be used in Wisconsin high schools through a partnership with the State Department of Public Instruction, which I could have asked Dr. Underle about, but I think she already covered that well in her answer that, and I'm paraphrasing her, she didn't put it this bluntly, but if you're saying a school should only be focused on reading, writing, arithmetic, all of the rote things and nothing about social studies or history or critical thinking at all, you're not a serious person. That's it. That's really what it comes down to. If you want, if you want schools that only teach what you agree with, teach them at home and teach them poorly, because that's what they're by and large going to get compared to somebody with a professional educational background that can, turn people into well-informed citizens, not mini-me's who will simply pass along anything that you got wrong when you were getting educated. So if they're going to learn a bit about democracy, I'd rather they learn it from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, professionals on a bipartisan commission that do these things right. The videos cover 4 areas: an overview of elections in Wisconsin, voting security, voter processes like registering to vote and requesting an absentee ballot, and a demonstration of what happens at the polls on election day. Now, I have not looked at these yet, but I'm thinking, Luke, we might just take these and edit them a bit to remove anything that is blatantly, a radio listener wouldn't get because of their videos. But I'm betting the audio version of this could be rather helpful to radio listeners as well.
I'm sure. And I'm going to have to go do some homework now. I love when I get homework assignments in the middle of the show.
Hey, I wasn't assigning it. I was really saying we should do that. And
somebody go find this audio. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I think it'll be very informative. And I think the Wisconsin Elections Commission has had its work cut out for it, because there's been so much of this back and forth. And so some informative videos. What, we got 6 weeks from tomorrow till election day? I think that'll be helpful information over the next 6 weeks.
43 days till the election, but votes are being cast already. For those folks who have already requested that an absentee ballot be sent to them, it's been sent. They're filling out those ballots. They're starting to send them back. So this is already underway, where you get a chance to vote for either, say, Governor Tony Evers or Republican nominee Tim Michaels, who, again, said that, Dr. Underle's address talks about going full woke. And I've said before and will say many times, woke is simply another way of saying don't be a jerk face. I think I've settled on jerk face instead of the word that starts with A, but, you know, that says what is it to be woke? To be woke means don't be a jerk face. I mean, there's many other ways I can be a jerk face. Luke accuses me of being a jerk face, you know, on a daily basis, but not in the way we're talking about here.
Yeah, it's not a daily basis, maybe weekly basis right now, but hopefully it doesn't get to the daily basis portion.
I have my moments. So what happens when you just sit here all day and
I'm gonna say you got to get out a little bit more. You got to get out a little
bit. I do. Well, that's the beauty of having two of the grandkids here this week is that, you know, as soon as this is over, we're probably going to go down to the zoo at Irvine Park and, you know, get on the playground for a little while, see if Grandpa can still get on some of these playground things or if he just says, all right, well, don't break your arm. Good luck.
You're going to really test out that knee. Give it a run for its money, huh?
I've noticed it's moving better than ever, but it's like I said before, it makes some weird cracking noises that it didn't used to make, you know, when you bend in a certain way so that it no longer hurts. But it's now got these sounds. It's like a bowl of Rice Krispies down there. And I don't know. I guess that's more than a fair trade-off, you know, is to have it make noise rather than make pain. But it is something new. But the playground equipment, I don't worry that much about trying to climb up on it because, you know, again, here's Grandpa talking about how back in my day, you know, our playgrounds were these monkey bars, you know, they were just metal rods and they were hanging above a slab of asphalt. And how more of us, you know, didn't survive childhood is a small miracle when I think of the things we used to do or the slides. There was one legendary slide, the triangle slide at Carson Park. But not only was it, you know, just a piece of sheet metal and a very wide one, but it was a skillet because they managed to position it in a way that in the middle of summer, it got the direct sun. It took the midday sun, and I can't even tell you how many kids came off of that thing, you know, certain that they were being, you know, braised or fricasseed or in some other way cooked because of the way that this thing was structured. So I'm, if the stuff now is probably a bit more plastic, probably isn't as good, you know, once it's all done and goes into the landfill. Again, we have to make fair trades in life. I think that one is a fair trade, especially for whatever that spongy matter is that they put below playgrounds now. That is quite literally a lifesaver. I'd actually like more of that around my house. You know, it might help my knees and my back is to have more of that spongy material, you know, to stand on instead.
Yeah, that would probably help a little bit. Now that the road's done, we got the sidewalk, we got the road in, they're doing the playground next. So we're about to get a new neighborhood playground. I'll be interested to see how it turns out.
Very nice. All right. Tomorrow, Attorney Mark Thompson, member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. So I'm sure, in fact, I will probably have to get that audio from the new election videos ready, at least some of them, and ask Mark more about that tomorrow. And also my Up North News colleague, Christina Laurie, about her recent interview with former White House photographer Pete Souza, whose new book, I believe, comes out tomorrow. So again, very timely to learn more about the inside stories of working in the Obama White House. But for now, that's our show for today. My great thanks to Dr. Jill Underley, to State Senator Kelda Royce, and to Scott Ross for making the day so enjoyable. Hope your day is enjoyable as well. We'll see you back here Tuesday.
If you forgive me all this,
give me.